what I wanted to ask, just for starters, is has the Fed moved to a less accommodative policy?
Yeah, I think the seventh paragraph of the new statement describes the committee's intentions along those lines, and that the committee's intention is not to move to a less accommodative policy. I guess I don't have to say that.
There's a perception in the market that it has, that, you know, because of the shifting of the dots, because of the reference to 6 months, and I also take from your statement today a sense that you think it has by, for instance, taking out the 2.5%, the reference to 2.5% inflation threshold. I get the sense that you think it has moved.
That's a good question. Let me break it up into two pieces. So let me talk first about the dots and the press conference. I think this is a great example of the challenges that lack of specificity in your forward guidance confront you with in communication. That if you're not specific in the statement, then market participants are just grasping for scraps of information everywhere, including the dots. As a way to try to formulate what is the committee really thinking. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this is just a great example of yet another example, following on the examples we had last spring and to a certain extent in the summer. If you're not specific about what your plans are, and I think specificity to me means numerical specificity, quantitative specificity, then market participants are going to be grasping for every piece of information that they can. And that requires then a lot of discipline and communication that's I think very hard to live up to. You know, just a clause and an answer to a senator can be suddenly it's moving markets just because the statement itself has not been clear about what the committee's intentions are. Mm-hmm. Now, so the second piece of what you ask about in terms of accommodation in terms of my dissent. I saw my dissent as really more about the lack of specificity and in the guidance. And I thought that raised two concerns for me. One is that I think we should have been more specific about how we were going to address the ongoing low inflation, both in our past performance and in terms of our outlook. We're targeting 2%. We should be taking purposeful steps that we're describing clearly and articulating to address that issue. And then I think lack of specificity means that we're not being clear about how we'd respond to eventualities that we don't necessarily anticipate happening. You know, if we have an adverse shock, what's that going to mean for policy, either in terms of prices or employment? If we have a good shock and things turn out better than we expect, what's that going to mean for policy? And I think being more quantitative and specific about that, as opposed to simply saying we're looking at the economy and trying to figure out what we're going to do, I think would have been better. Mm-hmm. And I just want to add one more thing to that, John, which is the fact that we're not being clear about how we're going to respond to eventualities like lower than target inflation, I think that increases the chances of those outcomes actually happening. If people think to themselves, you know, the Fed is going to respond aggressively to inflation running at 1.5% over a relatively long period of time, that tells them, okay, I don't need to think about that as being as likely because monetary policy is going to be aggressive in that situation.
What do you think those specific steps on the inflation piece, the committee should, you know, if you could have written the statement, what would you say that the committee should have, what steps should they say should be taking?
I think there's a wide range of things you could have done. I offered one specific form of guidance in my statement, basically saying that as long as the unemployment rate's above 5.5% and inflation stays below, the outlook stays below 2.25%, we're going to keep in this extraordinary accommodation. I would have been comfortable, even removing the unemployment rate marker, if we had said something along the lines of we're going to keep rates. The target the Fed funds rate in its current extraordinarily low level, as long as the 1 to 2 year ahead inflation outlook remains below 2%. So that would be another form of, that's just strictly directed at the inflation piece. But, you know, I have a slight preference for the one I gave in my statement, right. but I think there's a number of ways you could have gone that would have been helpful, more specific.
It's specifically the undershooting of inflation that you're concerned about right now.
I'm concerned about both things that I described in my, so I'm describing, I described two deficiencies. One is the undershooting of inflation, both when we look backwards and then prospective, and the fact that I think when we think about shocks that could hit the economy, I don't think we are clear enough about how aggressively we might respond to those shocks. Mm-hmm. And if you have the kind of guidance that President Evans originally offered and that I'm building on my statement, that gives you, okay, well, as long as the unemployment rate's above 5.5, the Fed is going to be aggressive. So that means if the unemployment rate spikes up for some reason, then it means they're going to take – we're automatically lower for longer. And that's an immediate buffer against that shock. I don't think we have that kind of immediate buffer built into our state.
Does the removal of the 2.5% threshold imply that the Fed's policy is now asymmetric, that it's more prepared to accept an undershoot of inflation than an overshoot of inflation?
Yeah, I don't. I always thought of the 2.5% as being I think I called it in my statement a guardrail as opposed to a threshold. Mm. And I, and it's because as long as the unemployment rate is above 6.5, I thought it was going to be really hard to get an outlook for inflation that was as high as 2.5. So I thought of it as a guardrail against a bizarre outcome by my perspective. So it's more about the lack of purposeful steps that are being described to deal with the fact that inflation has been so low, both when we look back and past, but also looking forward.
Right. Why do you think inflation is so low?
That's a great question, as always, but I think a part of it is reflective of ongoing underutilization of resources in the economy, and especially you see that in the labor market. And I think that puts downward pressure on wages, and that translates into downward pressure on prices. I think there are other factors that I don't fully understand, to be honest, but I think it is a signal of underutilization resources, and that's why inflation targeting central banks, take our neighbors to the north as an example, the Bank of Canada, are always clear when they have an inflation target, it's symmetric. We're worried about being above, and we're worried about being below, and the reason you're worried about being below is because it's a sign of something untoward in the economy, that you're underutilizing resources. And by being aggressive towards that, you're curing, you know, it's not the fact that inflation is running at 1.3% is, as the statement hints, the FOMC statement hints, I think problematic in itself, but it's more what it's a signal of is underutilization of resources, which we should be addressing.
So you think it's a better signal of the underutilization of resources than the unemployment rate, which is coming down and which some people think is getting close to its long-run sustainable level?
So by long-run sustainable level, we typically mean what's long-run, what's sustainable given 2% inflation. That's what we're looking at, right? Mm-hmm. That's our long-run goal. Mm-hmm. And I think that long-run goals. We have so many statements floating around. The long-run goals and strategy statement, the consensus statement that came out in January 2012, and then confirmed one more time. That makes clear that what the level of labor market health or labor market performance that's consistent with 2% inflation is always something we're having that's going to be evolving over time. And in fact, this last release of the SEP reveals that actually we've tightened that those estimates and brought them down. They're now the central tendency, I think, is between 5.2 and 5.6%. So this is all a long-winded way of saying is, you know, I've brought my own estimate down for that long-run unemployment rate. I was probably one of the higher runs at one point, and you know, I'm now more in that central tendency. And it's because when you keep seeing low inflation and the unemployment rate coming down, it makes you think, well, I've got to put some – it's not you – nothing's ever definitive, but it makes you think, boy, maybe the long run unemployment rate that's going to be consistent with 2% inflation is actually lower than I might have thought.
Mm-hmm. So
it's everything working. I don't. It's not. Nothing's a better signal than anything else. Everything is. Here I'm sympathetic to what the statement says. You have to be looking at a wide range of indicators.
Mm-hmm. Now the statement is a little vague, or maybe a lot vague. on the question, on the point that
I could
you,
stop you there. No, go on.
on the point that you approve of. So there's a point of keeping the Fed funds rate below the long-run equilibrium levels. It doesn't really explain why officials believe that that's the right path. So why do you believe it's the right path?
Okay, so I think that there's a number of answers to that question, which that's why maybe it doesn't appear in the statement, because the chair talked a little bit about this in her press conference, I thought. But I'll speak for myself. I think that when I talk to businesses and I talk to households, you just feel the scarring effects of 2008, September 2008, over and over again. People were told, you'll never have to worry about an outcome like that in your life, and then it happened. So what does that mean for households and businesses? They're much more leery of spending now. They want to have resources on reserve when they can. And that puts downward pressure on the amount of demand you'll have at any given interest rate. And so I think the interest rate that we're going to have to maintain in order to hit our goals over the longer run is going to be lower than it would be historically. Eventually, this scarring effect, I think, will and I see this even when I talk to people. You definitely see a diminution of this scarring effect of 2008 as we move forward. But it's going to take time.
Can I step on that point,
is
because we were getting this question from some of our colleagues, is this sort of the new normal, or are you saying that this is still dysfunctional and this dysfunction is going to persist longer than people realize? I mean, in other words, do you think the scarring effect is going to go away eventually or only diminish a little bit?
So I think this is another point about one has to be willing to update as we move forward. If you look at But I think the point of the FOMC statement is to say that our perspective is, and this is the part, John said I approve of, is that the long-run interest rate that we see is the Fed funds rate is going to be higher than where it would be, say, in 2016 or 2017, whenever you see the economy settling back to maximum employment and inflation target. So what I'm trying to say is, right now, I do not see this as the new normal, but we should be open to, considering that this could be a very persistent aspect of economic life. All I think this indicates is that the committee would have to follow a lower interest rate policy than markets might think, in order to achieve its objectives. Achieving its objectives is a sign of functionality on our part, right? I mean, that's a good thing.
So let's call it a scarring episode interest rate. What is that rate?
Well, that's it's lower than the long run. I think it's hard to offer. That's more of a forecast on the part of the committee, and there's going to be uncertainties about that.
Do you have an idea in your mind?
In my mind, if I'm asked about that, my own estimate is pretty low.
Right, which is?
So, I don't know how much I want to be pinned down on that, but it's, what do I want to say about that?
Is it a negative real rate?
Is it a negative real rate? Yes, it is. Uh-huh. Yes, that's correct.
Right.
Yeah, at that point, I would still see. I would see negative real Fed funds rate as being consistent with achieving our objectives in the.
How much credibility does this assurance have of a lower than normal rate when the committee hasn't articulated why that's going to be the case, and when different people have different ideas in their own minds to justify it.
So I think you should not – well, I'll speak again for myself. I don't view that portion of the committee statement as being a commitment. It's more a forecast of how we expect economic conditions to evolve. If the scarring that I described disappears really rapidly, that would be a great thing. Right. And then rates would have to move up more rapidly. On the other hand, if it takes longer, then the rates would have to be lower. And so there's uncertainties about it. Right now, our best forecast is that rates are going to be lower than they would be over the long
term. So you're using a term scarring. The chairwoman has used the term headwinds. There's different terms used. It doesn't sound like there's a model for any of this. It sounds like this is more
anecdotal?
You talked to people, you feel this, it. It was sort of more visceral than quantitative.
So
what does Fergus say it ought to be?
So
we don't listen to Fergus anymore.
So when you put this into a model, you would put this into people's beliefs about future outcomes for their consumption and firms' beliefs about future outcomes for their demand. Mm-hmm. And there would be some kind of tail risk that they're putting weight on, and that's going to affect whether I should spend or save. Mm-hmm. So let's focus on a household. Households put a higher weight on the possibility that there could be a very bad shock in which they face elevated risk of losing their jobs, losing their incomes, having their house values fall rapidly. Maybe they're much less willing to take out a home equity loan because of that. If you're saving for retirement, you're thinking, boy, maybe I just can't count on that stock market value being as solid. All of this flows can flow into a model, mm-hmm. as being uncertainties about the future path of my consumption, and then that shows up in my having less demand for consumption at any given real interest rate. Mm-hmm. That's all these terms, headwinds, et cetera, all flow into the same thing, which is there's less demand at any given real interest rate than there would be otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To go back to the, you know, communication and clarity of communication, what did you think of the chair's answer to the question of what does considerable period mean, and her saying 6 months or something like that? I mean, obviously there were a lot more words around that. Do you agree that that's a reasonable estimate?
You know, I think it's a sign of the problems that being the lack of specificity in the forward guidance creates for us, that it's a sign that the choicing of word, you're forced to answer that question as opposed to saying, but the truth is the answer depends on the evolution of economic conditions. And the phrasing of that should not be in terms of dates, it should be in terms of indicators of economic health. And the statement tries to say that. It says, we're looking at things. But really, that's the true answer to that question. And if you're specific about that in your guidance, then this question never comes up. And so I view that whole episode as being a sign of the challenges that we're going to create, confronted on an ongoing basis in communication because of lack of specificity in the statement.
Has your interest rate forecast changed in the past 3 months, past 6 months?
My interest rate forecast? I don't think it's changed materially, no.
Mm-hmm. Even though unemployment has come down more than the committee expected.
Yeah, I don't think it's resulted in a material change in my outlook. I'm having a challenge answering your question, John, because I actually don't think about policy in that way. I think about it more as how should we be thinking about it as a committee, as a collective, formulating a reaction function to the evolution of my own forecast for interest rate. I do have to write something down, but I view my own forecast for interest. I think that whole exercise, I'll be blunt about it. I find that whole exercise to be an extremely, extremely distracting one. Let's think about what is the hypothetical that's being asked. I'm being asked the following question. Suppose you, Narayana Kosakota, were in charge of monetary policy. Now, this is a hypothetical. It's so bizarre that it would not even appear in an economics paper, I don't think. So it's not really, that's not really what policy is about. Policy is about how does the committee get together as a collective and formulate the how we're going to react to
it. This gives us some insight into what people on the committee are thinking.
Absolutely, but I think you're listening to your speeches and the communication that they, people are very, many of my colleagues, including myself, are quite upfront. I think that's a much more rich and fulsome way to learn about what they're thinking than trying to track those
dots.
But
the dots are more systematic. You can actually, like, see them all in one place.
And quantify them. Going back to your point about specificity, John had an analysis in today's newsletter where he found that the median of the five lowest dots has actually moved up since December, whereas the median of the highest dot, five dots, the hawks, basically stayed where it was. So you could take from that that the doves are becoming a little bit less dovish, or maybe envisioning raising interest rates a little bit more than they did before. Is that completely crazy, or should we not like look at that?
I don't think you should be paying it. I think the chair said this exactly right. Those dots are going to move up. I forgot her exact words, but I really like
move up.
Yeah. You know, I think that's right.
But
I will say the committee creates this this interest on the part of your newsletter exactly this question by not having been specific in its guidance. Then I understand exactly why you're doing this analysis.
We're looking for specificity.
I understand that. But the chair is exactly right. That's not where to find it. But the problem is if we don't provide
it's
it in
the
state,
gui-
if it's not in the guidance, then you're forced to look for it elsewhere.
So let me ask you, why do you think you lost this debate?
I don't know. I struggled with that question. I can tell you, man.
Let me put it in another way. Why do you think the committee chose to go the way it did?
Well, that you have to ask them. But your original question I have struggled with about why I was not more persuasive on this point. And ultimately, of course, the answer is I don't know. It's like you ask a coach, you know, why'd you lose? Well, if you knew the answer to that, you presumably wouldn't have lost. If I was not able to hit on the right arguments, the right points to be convincing on this issue.
You,
and I feel very bad about it because I felt strongly enough about this to dissent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have a high bar for dissent. I felt strongly enough about this issue to dissent. And it's because I do think it's going to create a lot of challenges for us in terms of helping the economy.
Now, you're still pressing the issue. I mean, that's why you're here today. That suggests to me that you think you still have a chance to get these thresholds back in there.
Oh, no. To be clear about that, this is a debate that's been going on. If you read the minutes, you'll see it's a debate that's been going on for some time. But I think this guidance that the committee has issued is really being, barring changes in the outlook of some kind, calling closure to that debate. This is the guidance we're going to have to live with. I'm here to explain. I'm encouraged by my rest guy to explain myself on an ongoing basis.
Thank you.
And so, this
we're
is just
always here to listen.
No, it's just try to elaborate on my thinking more. Just the words by themselves in the press release might not have been as clear. And so
where do you go from here? So you lost the debate. What do you want? How do you want to move the?
You know, just move forward. Try to make decisions. Given what the current FOMC statement has said, try to make decisions as best we can to help the economy, facilitate a faster return of the economy to our goals of max employment and 2% inflation.
Given that the statement is what it is now, and you believe that it has communication challenges, what do you think? You know, individual members of the FOMC. I mean, was there a plan discussed sort of on communications, like how we should talk about this now? Or do you think there are ways that you and your colleagues can ameliorate the situation?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's, I think I don't have an easy answer to that off the top of my head. You know, I think it's, a situation where, and I think we saw this last summer with regards to the asset purchase program, the conversation about tapering, that relatively small changes in utterances by participants really and this the chair faces this responsibility even more keenly than anyone else, can have an influence on market beliefs, given that the committee itself has not expressed a collective. On that, I'll speak for myself. You know, I think that this is a problem that I will face less than others because just because of what happened. Right. So it's not as much of a problem for me because I won't be seen as speaking for the committee. So I don't have to worry about it as much for myself, but you know, I think it is it's going to be a challenge for others.
So do you keep dissenting? I mean, they've done this, and
As I described, this is a debate that's over, and we move on. You know, and we've all been on committees. At least I've had more of my share of experiences of losing those debates. It's, you know, you go on, you move on to the next topic and next conversation about how to help the economy.
Can I ask you on the point of how small utterances can take on huge meaning? So the other day that kind of jarred the markets was when. Ms. Yellen referred to the bond buying program ending in the fall. People immediately went to the calendar. They were saying, like, does that mean the meteorological fall or calendar fall? And does that mean it could happen in December? Or are we talking September? Because then you're calculating 6 months from there. So in your mind, do you have a sense of when you think the bond buying program will end or preference for when it'll end?
I thought my own thinking about the bond buying program is, and I think some of my colleagues have expressed this, that basically as long it will take, the committee has communicated in such a way about the bond buying program that it'll take a relatively large change in the outlook, either up or down, to change the pace of the reduction in asset purchases. So that's my thinking about it.
Okay. But let me ask you a slightly technical
question of whether so. Based on that pace,
yeah, there's this extra five.
Right, so do you
have? I'll be frank. I haven't thought that through. So
there's no decision on that. That's.
I haven't thought about it.
Right. Okay.
That's all I'll say.
Right.
Yeah, I forget. Yeah.
That's exactly what it was obsessed about.
Do you think it matters? Minor, so, like, based on what people are doing very simplistic.
From an economic point of view, I will say this.
Yeah.
In terms of the outcome for the economy, this doesn't matter. The reason why I believe why people are fixated on this, it's a signal of other the committees. This is why.
Well, people are taking that and the 6 months and saying April.
And you, right. But even deeper than that, people are trying to figure out. How dovish actually are the doves and how hawkish are the hawks?
Yeah.
I think being more clear in your formal communication as a committee mm-hmm. could really ameliorate a lot of those challenges.
So you talked a lot about inflation. The committee's forecast is that it's moving back towards 2%. You sound a little worried about that. I suspect that there are people on the committee who are comfortable doing what it's doing because they're confident in their forecast that inflation's going back up to 2%. Are you?
I think one thing. So my own forecast, first of all, is that inflation will go back to 2%. It's over a relatively extended time frame. You know, I would say, four to five years, inflation will return. That's my baseline forecast. But I think one of the things that we should have certainly learned over the last 5-6 years is you should have a lot of humility about your forecasts and be prepared for outcomes that are different from what you forecast. And I would add, I think the committee should be communicating clearly about how it's going to. I think you actually are, as a monetary policymaker, you're not just sitting there waiting for the data to flow to you. You can actually shape the probability of outcomes by communicating about how you're going to respond to those outcomes. If people know ahead of time that you're going to respond aggressively if inflation continues to run low, I think that takes that – it doesn't take it off the table by any means, but it reduces the probability of the outcome, which is what we should be trying to.
You're worried that there's been an impression created that it's not communicating that aggression?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you see that – we use the word drift. You know, inflation's drifted downward, and we were not communicating clear, purposeful steps to return inflation back to target. As an inflation targeting central bank should. I'm not talking about something that's outside the realm of how inflation targeting central banks operate.
Mm-hmm. So given how long it's run below the target, given your desire for a symmetrical approach, do you think that the Fed should be aiming to move it a little bit above the target for a little while?
So this is an interesting question and a very deep question. I think it's one that requires a lot more conversation and thought. So the idea here would be we announced a target in January 2012 of 2% inflation. We've run below that now for over 2 years. Should we commit to following a policy that would return prices as opposed to inflation back to where people might have expected them to go in January 2012? So that would mean you have to make up for the loss. That's, as I said, an interesting question. Certainly it's one I think that it should be a conversation about.
Mm-hmm. Is there?
Ongoing academic conversation about that, and it's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm. Is there a Fed conversation about it?
Yeah, that's taking me beyond what I'm willing to say.
All right. I wanted to ask you a couple of detailed questions about strategy. So when the Fed does start moving the interest rate, and the clear consensus on the committee is at some point in 2015, do you think that that the first move in the rate should be to firm up the floor around the upper bound, or do you think it should be to take it beyond the upper bound? So right now there's this range of 0 to 25 basis points, and the Fed funds rate is around 8 basis points on a daily basis. I mean, it seems like going from 8 to 50 is a really big move, and I'm just wondering if, you know, it would make sense to go from 8 to 25 first to kind of firm up where the funds rate is going to be in the future.
It's a great question. I just haven't thought about it as deeply as you have. So I don't have an answer to give to that at this point. I will think about it, but I haven't really thought
that. That actually gives you an extra step to take.
I haven't thought that through. But I want to go back to your premise of your question about 2015, because I think it's very important. The committee, what you're seeing is the committee's outlook for the evolution of economic conditions would imply that at this stage, a forecast, if you go by the dots, forecast the appropriate policy would mean liftoff in during the year 2015. But I want to tie it back to the outlook. It's not about they've gone home and everyone said, okay, we're going to do it in mid-2015. It is about the connection back to the outlook. That's all.
Right. So I want to ask you another technical question. Yeah. So the New York Fed has been doing a lot of work on this reverse repo program and how it relates to the exit strategy and the long-term framework for policy. Do you think that the reverse repo rate together with the IOER, not together, should be the new policy tool and that the Fed funds rate is no longer the right tool?
I think it's a really interesting question to think about what our long-run framework is going to be. One thing I will say is simply that I don't feel a need to return back to the way we were doing monetary policy in 2005. I don't see a need for why monetary policy in 2025 will look the same as it did in 2005. I think certainly some of the experiments that are going on in the New York Fed are quite interesting and potentially informative.
Can I ask sort of a specific question on that? In the minutes from the January meeting, there was sort of more detail about the vote that you all took regarding the continuing the testing of that program. And it was a little unclear. It said, you know, sort of the chair now has the authority to continue raising the bid limit. But something about, you know, will consult with the FOMC before going to full allotment. Does that mean the FOMC would formally have to approve going to full allotment, or she's just obligated to be like, hey, I'm going to do this now?
I can't
Does
really.
It matter?
I don't think I can be more specific than the minutes were on that.
So given the committee's outlook for the way the economy is going to unfold, which implies some action in 2015 that could change, there have to be decisions made, you know, at some point within the next 12 months, presumably about the longer term framework. So, like, what's the timetable for that? When do you think these decisions need to get made?
Certainly, it would be desirable to have these decisions made in advance of liftoff.
That gives you a lot of time.
So that's
I would think far in advance of what.
You know, that would be, I think, it would be good to be thinking about these things and having clarity on them in advance, and, you know, preferably well in advance. But, you know, that depends on we want to get these things right too. So there's always, you know, there's a tension between those two things about having being able to give sufficient communication in advance of actually the implementation of where we're going to go, but also having, you know, an appropriately thorough and fulsome discussion within the committee. We'll have to weigh those off, those two tensions off.
The economy has continued to disappoint on growth, and unemployment has continued to come down more than Fed officials expect.
That's correct.
How do you explain that, and how has your explanation changed over the last 12 months, if at all?
Yeah, I think a lot of it. So first of all, my understanding of this is still evolving. That would be a starting point to say, but I do think that we're seeing people having a sense of disengagement. That's part of what's going on. There's a sense of disengagement. Part of it is, I think. Part of it, I think, is definitely the, you know, there's demographic influences. There's definitely part of that's there. But we can't try to strip those out by looking at the behavior of the employment population ratio, the unemployment rate for those aged 25 to 54. And that story is that there is a recovery in labor market health. I think the behavior of the overall unemployment rate overstates that recovery. And why that is I think that the long weak performance of the labor market has definitely just been a source of discouragement for some workers.
Is it possible the economy just doesn't need to grow as fast, given the demographic changes, as it did in the past, to bring the labor market back to full utilization?
So this is just going to be an ongoing question we have to confront. I mean, I think that when we look at the employment population ratio for those aged 25 to 54, as I said, we've seen some improvement there, and that's where I think we want to see even more improvement than we've seen so far. So I think there's room. The way I think about this is there's still room. You know, how much room? I'm not sure. And there I turn to my inflation markers as my guide a little bit to say, as long as there's as much room as we have on the inflation front, then I don't have to be worried about it being as precise as you probably want me to be in answer to your question.
So are you an inflation targeter? Are you someone who's saying, let's like really focus on inflation right now because that's the best signal we can get on utilization?
The committee is an inflation targeting central bank.
But I mean, the primary focus.
I have this newfound reputation as a dove. I mean, I think of myself as a dual mandate hawk. So basically, I'm really concerned about both aspects of the mandate. And they both are pointing in the same direction right now. In some ways, it's easier to talk about inflation, John, because we have a 2% marker out there, and it's easy for everyone to see, boy, we're doing bad, we're underperforming relative to that. So it's easy to talk about that. It's harder on the employment. I think we're underperforming on that too, but it's a little harder to talk about that because I can't say how much because I don't know exactly what the long run markers are.
Yeah. Is there possible though that even though 2% has been sort of thought of as the goal, is the target and is desirable, that inflation has been kind of around 1% for so long that inflation expectations could get anchored there. And then that then becomes a self-reinforcing thing, and that becomes then the new normal. And it becomes harder to dislodge.
Yeah, I think you've raised a real risk. It's not one that, I think inflation expectations remain anchored despite this experience. The good news is I think inflation expectations have been, as I said, they've been well anchored here. I think other low inflation outcomes, they've proven in other countries I'm thinking of.
Like Japan.
And Sweden, I'm thinking of more. Inflation expectations remain relatively well anchored despite inflation that was in the low ones. So but you don't want to – I think this is a risk, and you've got to keep your eye on it and worry about it. one way to ameliorate that risk is to clearly be taking purposeful steps to ameliorating the low inflation outlook that we have.
What are the next purposeful steps that the Fed could take, given the tools that it has given itself?
Yeah, that's I think that's a good question, and I don't think I'm going to try to answer it off the top of my head. I think we have to be thinking about
it. Let me rephrase it. I mean, do you think the Fed should be doing more? Because, as you say, they should be saying in the statement that we will take purposeful steps to make, you know, inflation rise and unemployment fall down. You can't lower the Fed funds rate anymore, and you're winding down bond buying. I mean, do you think that you should not be winding down the bond buying?
I think you should be, you know, I think your tool right now is communication, and you should be using communication as effectively and forcefully as you can. Your other tool is the level of the interest and excess reserves, and that remains at 25 basis points. That's your other tool.
But the communication looks like it just became more hawkish.
It's going to be, you know, as I just talked about, we've reached a point. I don't know if it's more. It certainly it's not as specific on taking these purposeful steps as I would like.
All right.
Okay, move to video.
We got a couple more minutes, and then we'll go do the video. Yeah. I mean, if you guys have any more questions.
I guess that's my main question is, like, what more could you do? And so that goes back to you're saying, so. But it's kind of an odd thing, which is we should go back and say we're going to take purposeful steps, but I actually can't really think of any that we could take right now that.
No,
would make
I
a
think
difference.
That trying so to be more clear about that, I describe the purposeful step in my press release of what we should do, which is to say we're going to keep interest rates low as long as the unemployment rate falls to 5.5%, as long as the inflation is still running, the outlook is below 2.25%. I would have been, as I indicated earlier, comfortable with something that said we were going to keep interest rates extraordinarily low, at least until the inflation outlook rises up to 2%, without any reference to unemployment. So I said that earlier. Discussion. What I haven't thought through is what should the purposeful steps be, given that the committee chose not to take the purposeful steps. That
yeah. What other steps are
yeah,
what
that,
now?
Yeah, that, yeah. Now I haven't thought.
Now that they
that.
Didn't listen to you.
Yeah. Not, at that stage, I haven't thought that through at this point.
Last question. Did the meeting go exactly how other meetings have gone? When Bernanke first came in, he kind of changed things around. He spoke last instead of first. Was this an exact replica of the Fed meetings that you've without disclosing any of the content of the meeting, was the approach to policy making by Yellen the same as it was by
I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of continuity between the two of them. You know, they work closely together. There's going to be a lot of continuity.
How did she do?
Oh, I think she's been great. I mean, I'm a huge admirer of hers. You know, she was my colleague as a bank president first. I've learned, and then later she was vice chair. My conversations with her, I've always learned a tremendous amount talking to her, and I think she's done a tremendous job. So that's all.
Even though you strongly disagree with the first thing she did.
Well, that's a committee decision.
Right.
You know, it's not. You know, these are committee decisions, and the chair.
Do we live in a world of a weak chair?
You know that the weak chair. America, we should be happy we have a strong committee.
Right.
I think the way to think about it.